So, there he is.
I got him.
So, this is Jonathan Lamanti. Lamantia screening for resistance to BMSB. And I don't know what that stands for. Right. It's your job.
Well, I'll tell you.
Good night.
So, thank you all for attending and staying to the bitter end. For the last 2.5 years, my lab in Worcester, Ohio, has been screening the soybean germplasm collections for resistance to the brown marmorated stink bug. If you've never seen the brown marmorated stink bug, here it is. That's the actual size as well. just kidding. So it's actually about the size of a nickel. There are some common stink bugs that we find in our agricultural fields. Across the bottom, here's the five nymph instar stages of the brown marmorated stink bug, and there's the male and the female, and the female is just a little bit larger than the male. The nymphs have quite a spectacular patterning on their backs, which makes it easy to distinguish, but then some of the adults are a little bit more ambiguous. Right here is the green. Obviously, you can detect green from brown, but this is the common brown stink bug, and then the soldier bug. The brown marmorated stink bug has white striping on its legs and antenna, and it has more of a rounded shoulder, where the brown does not have the striping and has sharp corners at the shoulders. Here's the sort of a brief history of the introduction to the brown marmorated stink bug. It's come over from Asia. Here's some population structure where there's quite a bit of genetic diversity in Asia. And then there's been two introductions, one to the East Coast and one to the West Coast. We know that the introduction on the East Coast happened in Allentown, Pennsylvania in the mid-90s. And here on the left, here is now the one of the more current maps of the detection and level of severity of the brown marmorated stink bug in the U.S. So it's a severe agricultural pest in 9 states, and it's been detected in over 42 states. So the brown marmorated stink bug is polyphagous. It's a generalist. It'll eat on lots of different plant species. It's been a major problem in the mid-Atlantic states on apples and pears. But it'll also go after sweet corn, green beans, tomatoes, and soybeans. This is actually one of my pictures, and you can see, so the stink bugs have a stylet, and they use it to penetrate the fruit. And so you can see here, this black mark here is the penetration of the stylet through the pod wall and right into the bean, and you can see here where there's feeding damage. We also know that stink bugs are vectors for Aromatheseum coralei, which is a yeast species, and so it causes yeast spot disease, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on. So my lab's in Worcester, Ohio. We're about an hour south of Cleveland, and Ohio grows maturity group 2 and maturity group 3 soybeans. We have a high-value niche market where we grow a conventional food-grade, high-protein soybean for export for the tofu market in Japan. So if you can imagine, the damage the stink bug will cause has an effect both on yield and the aesthetic value, where we would lose that and lose the value to the tofu market. So here's the experiments that we've designed. We were able to collect the brown marmorated stink bug from our fields in Ohio, and we started our own colonies and began replicating them. And we got enough to actually have high pressure and start screening germplasm. So we have large field cages. We have two of them. So one's an infested cage and one is a non-infested cage. And within each cage, we two randomized complete blocks where each plant is double planted within the block. In 2014, we did the maturity group 3s. In 2015, we did maturity group 2s. And so at R5, all the plants are pruned to 10 pods so that we normalize the potential feeding across all lines. And then we release upwards of 1,400 stink bugs. And so we're trying to hit 5 stink bugs for every 2 plants. And so our initial screening, we've been using tetrazolium staining to get both an incidence and a severity rating. Here are the cages that I spoke of, and here is the visual assessment of the stink bug feeding. On the left is the infested seeds. So tetrazolium stains live or living tissue red and will leave necrotic tissue white or black. So you can see here there's quite a bit of feeding damage on the infested, and then here are the controls where there's no feeding. So here's the data. On the left is maturity group 3s from 2014 and maturity group 2s from 2015. On the x-axis, we have the incidence, which is a percent of the flat and damaged seeds over the total number of seeds. And on the y-axis is the mean score of the tetrazolium staining for each line. In both cases, we can see that there is a quantitative range of both incidence and severity. And then as incidence increases, we see a breakdown of that correlation between the incidence and severity. So there's probably multiple components of resistance. The X's, so the red is Summit, the blue is Prohio, and these are cultivars that are grown in Ohio. And you can we're seeing consistent damage across the 2 years. The tetrazolium staining is quite laborious and intensive. When we do these experiments, we harvest all of the plants, hand thresh them, and then do the damage assessment. And it'd be much easier just to do weight loss rather than do the threshing and then do the tetrazolium staining, where you have to imbibe the seeds for 24 hours, and then do the staining, and then do the visual assessment, which is still subjective. So we switched, and it's much easier just to do weight loss for the severity. So we took the best and the worst from the maturity group 3s, and then we wanted to repeat these experiments on a smaller scale. So we had smaller cages where we had, so we did 3 infested cages, 3 non-infested cages. Each, we had 10 PIs that were represented, double planted twice. And again, we tried to hit that 5 adult stink bugs for every 2 plants. There were no significant differences in the amount of seed. So we didn't prune them this time because we wanted to make sure there wasn't an effect of pruning on a potential resistance response. So there were not significant differences in the number of seeds per cage, and there weren't any differences in the number of feeding across the cages. And there were no significant differences of seed number by genotype as well. And this is really the best data I'm going to show you. So our most resistant lines in that initial screening ended up being significantly different than our most susceptible lines. So 085665 and 097139 are significantly more resistant than these 3 lines here. And this is the incidence. And again, we see that to a lesser degree with the severity, and this is weight loss. But we are still seeing significant differences between these 2 lines and this one susceptible line. These were choice tests. There can be a feeding bias, so if the susceptible lines are attracting feeding, and so we wanted to do what's known as a no-choice test, where the stink bugs are only given one option to feed to see if they are truly resistant. So we decided to, instead of buying lots of cages, we just decided to go to Lowe's and buy buckets. So we bought food grade buckets. They're 5 gallons, and then we just put screening material over the top to keep the stink bugs in the buckets. And then we also wanted to see if there are any effects on pod maturity. So we've been doing all of our screening at R5, and we wanted to see if that would continue at R6, or if there would be an effect of pod maturity on susceptibility. Unfortunately, there was an effect in the greenhouse. Some of the lines had a significantly more amount of seed than some of the others, so there was an adjustment for seed numbers. But for the three, for our traits, incidence, and severity, there were significant differences for genotype, the pod maturity, and the interaction of the genotype by the pod maturity. So now all the data I'm going to show you is going to be separated by pod maturity. So here's the incidence in the black bars is the genotypes at R5, and then the gray bars is the pod, the plants at R6. And we're still seeing significant differences at R5, particularly between 097139 and 243540. What you also notice is that these most susceptible lines at R6 lose their susceptibility. So the susceptibility is sensitive to pod maturity. And so that actually occurred twice in these two most susceptible lines where they were less susceptible at R6. And this, that was for incidence. And we see the same with the severity as well. So we're seeing significant differences between this most resistant line and susceptible line for the weight loss, but then we're losing that severity between R5 and R6. But really, we're quite excited with the data across the three tests. We're seeing very consistent incidence on this on these two resistant lines here. So 097139 never gets above about 18% damage. And so there's some of the data we were showing you with the cultivars where there's not a lot of resistance. We're excited about using these for mapping and introgressing into our cultivars. What's really interesting is that some of these most susceptible lines have aphid resistance. And so we've been able to use the maturity group 2 and maturity group 3 data and do a GWAS. And so one of the SNPs was in a QTL for pod wall thickness, but we also hit one of the RAG genes, which is the aphid resistance. So we've got some experiments where we're going to look at the effect of aphid resistance on BMSB susceptibility. We've got an RNAi line where we're knocking out aphid resistance and seeing if that will affect BMSB feeding. Are we good on time? Okay. So very quickly, so I said that we know that stink bugs carry yeast, and so we've been able to isolate and culture the yeast from a soybean that was fed on by BMSB, and we wanted to see if we can use that to screen for resistance. So we had, so we took some of our resistant and susceptible lines, and we did four treatments. One was a control. One is where we punctured the seed with a sterile syringe. The third treatment was where we just pipetted yeast onto the soybean seed, and the fourth treatment was where we punctured and inoculated. And so basically, we're able to quantify resistance out of that as well. So again, treatment one was the control. Treatment three here is where we just pipette. And so there's no significant difference in our resistant line, but there is a significant difference in our susceptible line. And then treatment two was puncture with a sterile syringe, and treatment four was puncture and then inoculate. We do see a significant difference between those treatments within our resistant line, but it's more significant with our susceptible line. When you compare the resistance by susceptible with treatment three, which is just pipette the inoculum, there's no significant difference. But then when you do the puncture and inoculate, we do see significant difference. So we're excited about doing this because that, you know, cuts out doing, you know, working in the field and having to maintain a colony of the stink bugs. So take-home messages, we have sources of host plant resistance to the brown marmorated stink bug. It's quantitative. It may be mechanical at the pod wall and potentially at the seed coat or the seed composition, or with the degradation of by the yeast inoculation. And susceptibility may be associated with aphid resistance. And we're going forward with these two sources of resistance for mapping projects. We're going to look at these maturity group 2 lines, the best and the worst, and repeat these experiments. But actually, instead of going R5 and R6, we're doing R4 and R5 to see if it holds up in younger pods. And we're also going to look at seeing if the resistance holds up to some of these native stink bugs as well. Yep. And there are my acknowledgments. We're getting financial support from the Ohio Soybean Council and the USB. I don't have the best lab picture, but there's Chris and there's Kelly behind the planter, and they've done an incredible amount of work, so they should be acknowledged.
Good enough.